Hi, this is Bob Wells here, and welcome to Undercurrent Stories. This is the show where we hear about people's interests and uncover some fascinating stories at the same time. I hope you enjoy today's show. Hello and welcome to Undercurrent Stories. In today's show, I'm delighted to be joined once again by Steve Carroll. Steve is an artist, author and teacher. In fact, I've known Steve since school and I can remember Steve enthusing about his art and enjoying art all that time ago. Today, he continues to enjoy his art, both painting and encouraging others to paint through his art history courses, practical art courses and online teaching. Such is his enthusiasm for art that he speaks about it regularly at art societies and other social groups, and he truly believes that each and every one of us should have the opportunity of discovering and enjoying art for ourselves, particularly as adults where it may have become a distant memory. So even if you don't regard yourself as an artist, I encourage you to listen to Steve, and you never know, you might even find your inner artist. Hello and welcome to the show, Steve.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Robert. Great. Is it Robert or Bob?
Well, you can call me either.
Bob.
So Bob's the one that we know. So yeah, okay. I'm happy to call Bob. Yeah, okay, Robert fine. Was normally, if I'd misbehaved as a child, it would be Robert.
Exactly. You know? Yes.
Otherwise, it was Bobby. But there you go. Anyway, and it's great to have you back on. It's been a few years, and about 3 years since you last came.
I think so. Yes.
Yeah. You're very pleased to know, first of all, Steve. I did some painting at the weekend. Yeah, I was doing my the ceiling and the wall of my daughter's house.
Yeah, I guess it was going to go that way.
Yeah, this could be a long one.
Yeah.
Anyway, in all seriousness, before we talk about art and your art and learning art, can you just tell us a bit about yourself, your life's journey, and how you became interested, please, Steve?
Well, it's interesting. My mother is an artist. She still paints. She has a little studio in her back garden. And I was fascinated by what she was doing. There's also something there that's, you know, the background I come from a very working class background, and nobody did art apart from my mum. And it was a mystique to me, something very mysterious. And I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I'm trying to better myself through art, but it was like a completely different world to the one that I was surrounded by. And that encouraged me as well. I kind of wanted to get into this other world, which sometimes can be a little bit elitist, and I don't like that at all. I try to break down the elitism of art. But it's just a bit more. It's a world where, you know, when we were kids, it was the old thing about, you know, men weren't allowed to talk about their feelings and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I got very frustrated with that. I wasn't that type of person. And I just thought that through art, you can talk about and express feelings. And I felt like, you know, I'd become more of a human being through art. That was how my interest started. With the person who was the greatest influence, it was a guy in our school. You may remember an art teacher called Dave Dibb.
Yes, I do.
And he was one of the most important people in my life, looking back. He was the one who encouraged me and, you know, showed me that I could actually do it. I was actually, you know, I did actually have talent. And that was a very important thing. He was the one who encouraged me to go to art college. And so I consider him a very important person in my life. And I also see, you know, very much the importance of a good teacher, of a good encouraging teacher. I really do think they can change your life.
That's an interesting story, how you got started there, Steve. Thanks for that. I'm going to ask you quite a heavy question, and you've probably been asked it before. But I will just sort of put a little caveat in, as much as we did used to discuss this in our school sixth form. We'd be listening to, I don't know, Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd or Sweet Home Alabama or something. How do you define art?
That's a very interesting question, and it's actually a question whether there are a number of, like, official definitions of art. One definition is that art is something that can't be used for anything else. And I remember the story of, if I'm allowed to mention his name, Jeremy Clarkson, who went to somebody in the Tate Modern and said, "Why isn't there a Ferrari in the Tate Modern?" Yeah. And he was told it's because a Ferrari can be used for other things. Art is something which is just art. That's, you know, that's one definition of art, but it's a little bit, for me, it's a little bit vague. When I'm teaching art history, this is my definition of art. It's a fusion of craft and cosmogony. What I mean by that is that, number one, it's craft in that it has to be something that somebody's spent some time putting together. It's not, you know, it's worth looking at because somebody has spent some time thinking about it and putting it together. That's the craft side. But the, what I mean by cosmogony is worldview, is that when you look at it, you can actually tell something about the type of people who made that art. And so, you know, you can look back at the Egyptians and you can look at their art and find out something about what they believed, what they were really about. You can look at an impressionist painting or a Picasso or, and, you know, and it will, as well as it being, you know, well put together, it's also, it says something. And that's the type of art that interests me. So that's the definition I use when I'm teaching art history. But then when I'm teaching practical art, but very often to people who may not have you know, much confidence, you know, I don't want to give them some high lofty view of what art is, and so I tend to take a far more fun view of art, and you know, I say it's basically, you know, it's a kind of, you know, creative human activity. It's when you're making your mark, your statement. And, you know, I teach painting and drawing, but the same could be said of anything like music, ballet, you know, dance, theatre, anything like that. It's where the human person actually, like, makes their mark, puts their stamp upon something. In that context, that's what I think of as art.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I think that's cleared up what art is. Thank you for that. Something I'm very interested in, as an older, you know, for older people, mature people, for people who have perhaps forgotten all about drawing and painting and stuff, is there a point where it's basically too old to learn again?
No, I think the point which is too old to learn, I mean, recently we lost my father-in-law. My father-in-law had dementia towards the end of his life, and you know, I don't want to sound depressing, but there are points in which I think you know, one's mental faculties, you know, obviously, yeah. You know, this is a fact of life. But you know, other than that, I don't really see any reason why you shouldn't be able to start, you know, in a very simple way. I mean, one of the things I do when I teach people how to draw, I start off by teaching them how to draw cartoons.
Yeah.
And I tell them to look at cartoons, look at the Simpsons, look at the, you know, cartoons in the newspaper, whatever. You know, why does that look like a face? Why has the cartoonist been able to make that person look angry, sad, whatever? And these are really the fundamentals of drawing, and anybody can really do that. And what I do is I start off from there, and then, you know, move on to something more complex.
Yes, that's interesting. And one of the sort of questions that I've got linked with that is this thing about talent, natural inbuilt talent as an artist, and being taught to, you know, to actually paint or draw. Is it possible for somebody who, in quotes, doesn't think they've got any talent to actually produce something that someone else might see and say, oh, yeah, that's really good?
Yeah, I do think that. I think that, I mean, I at one time used to think this idea about talent is you know, overblown. As I've gone on as a teacher, I do notice some students have a flair. They just have a sort of a natural thing. But the problem is sometimes those people can't see it. And the worst thing is just having a negative mindset. And so you get talented people who just refuse to see it. You keep saying, you know, that's really good. And they go, no, it's not. I'm rubbish, you know, and all this type of thing. Yeah. And then you have somebody, I could think of a young man who came to one of my classes. He, he'd been taken a year off, gone around Australia. And when he finished his tour of Australia, he decided he was going to be an artist. That's what he wanted to do. So he basically came back to, you know, Worthing, where I'm situated, and saw an advert for one of my courses and just said, right, I'm going to do that. He did it. It was a very short course. He really stretched himself. He didn't have what I would say immediate talent, but he pushed himself and pushed himself. He took away the portfolio of work that he created in my class, and he went to the University of Brighton, and he got onto a course doing special effects for films, CGI and that type of thing. Yeah. So, you know, he's gone on and he has had a career. He basically just decided that's what he was going to do, and he did it. And I see people who have far more talent than him who just, you know, they just keep knocking themselves down. I mean, one of the biggest things that I come across, and it breaks my heart, is so many people who do my classes when they're like, you know, later in years, maybe even retired, and they say, I always loved art, but my art teacher told me I was rubbish.
Oh, really?
Yep. And yeah. I've heard that over and over and over again, and it makes me mad because it's like it's, I almost feel like what I'm doing is counteracting stuff like that. You know, there has to be a sort of certain amount of fun. I try to make my classes, you know, quite live, light atmospheres because it is about fun. It is hard work. You know, anything is learning to play an instrument, learning to drive, anything that's worthwhile doing. There's a sort of, you know, a pain barrier you go through. But it's not the end of the world if you have a bad day, you know.
No.
Yeah.
Something that's always interested me is the because I when I was painting, I wasn't really doing any painting. I got to. I don't think my art teacher ever said I was rubbish, but I just got a little bit, I suppose, bored, and I was interested in music more. So I sort of went that way. But that's a different story. But one of the things that I've always found interesting is this sort of dynamic between the actual craft of painting or drawing, where you've got to know, you know, perspective, you've got to know the different types of brushes and the colors, and then the almost and you hinted about it earlier on, the vision of what you want to produce, which I sort of see more as a sort of arty thing. How can those two be? How do they work together, those two things?
Well, they work together with practice. The thing about art, and this is something I have to tell myself because I spend a lot of time, you know, when I'm doing teaching preparation or, you know, whatever, I'm not able actually to do any drawing or painting. I spend a long time thinking, and I keep telling myself there's no point thinking about it. You've got to do it. And it's really just getting the action habit and really doing it. And yes, you might have a vision in your head of what you want to do. And sometimes you try to put it down and it doesn't quite come out the way you want. But I mean, I find it very interesting. It's like the difference between art appreciation and actually practically doing art. It's often a surprise to me when I listen to artists I know, you know, either famous artists I know about or you know, people who are friends of mine. And I listen to them talking about the type of art they create and the type of art they appreciate. And they're two different things. And they're two different mental activities, making art and appreciating art. And so you get, you know, it always, you know, you get somebody who's like a very much a modern artist, and you know, and then they talk about the artists they like, and they're very classical painters. You know, they're talking about the Renaissance, they're talking about, you know, Michelangelo, Leonardo, and going on to Rembrandt and people like that. Yeah. And I'm thinking, but you don't paint like that. And you know, this is so that's an example where artistic vision and artistic practice are completely different. But I find that when you just keep going and you keep working at it, it's like you slip into your own style, and you sometimes you can surprise yourself what you're creating, and you're thinking, well, I didn't set out to do that. That's not what I had in my head, but this is what works. I hope that does that make sense?
Yeah, no, very much so, Steve. Yeah, very eloquently put, and I think I do understand that. So again, you teach the history of art.
Yes, I do.
You mentioned there about artists, you know, looking back to the Renaissance. How important is it for a budding artist to learn about the history of art?
I think it is important. I think it's important to know where ideas came from. I think it's important to know that, for example, you know, like, you know, if I mentioned the Impressionists were so radical in their day. People thought they were mad and they laughed at their paintings. Now they're worth millions and people love their paintings, you know. And it's just sometimes knowing that, you know, everybody had, you know, every new movement in art, you know, had to go through that pain barrier to be recognized. And I think that's encouraging, but it's also just, you know, like the philosophy of art, why they did certain things, what they were trying to achieve. And the other thing is when I'm teaching practical art, what I say is, look, if you're going to learn, if you want to be a good artist, then you've got to learn from great artists. And, you know, there's a number of artists, you know, I could mention, I won't, but you often see them in these sort of like popular galleries. And people think they're great, and they're not. They're really mediocre, you know, compared with what you see in the National Gallery.
Yeah.
And if you copy a mediocre artist, you're going to be a less than mediocre artist a lot of your time. Yeah. If you actually try to learn from the great artists, you're going to be a good artist, and you could go on to be a great artist. So, you know, I actually always say, you know, you look at the greats, because they achieved it. They went there. Yeah. And you might not ever reach their heights, but you're going to reach further by looking at them than you are looking at mediocre, you know, artists.
Yeah. In terms of computers and stuff, and I'd like to get into the different types of painting in a minute, but in terms of computers, do you teach on the computer side of things?
I used to, but it's because I was teaching the evenings and all the support staff had gone, and if anything went wrong with the computer or with the sort of the intranet, I had no way of sorting it out. So I just actually stopped doing that. It was too stressful. It is quite a hard thing. The other thing also with the computer is because you're teaching all about the techniques and what this tab does and what that does and all that, that it gets a little bit far removed from the creativity. I mean, you should see a computer. I mean, I do artwork on the computer, but you should see it as just like a paintbrush. You know, it's just a tool for getting there. It doesn't. It shouldn't hamper you. No. There's a new generation. Like my youngest son is a professional artist. He does everything on the computer, and he just flies with it. You know, he's amazing what he does. He does animation and all sorts of things. So I'm a sort of a generation before that, and I tend to still like, you know, paint on canvas and that type of thing. But yes, I used to teach it, but it's for good practical reasons, I don't now.
So in summary, it's like another tool,
It is like another tool. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Which leads on to AI.
Yeah.
Yeah. How is that affecting art?
Well, it's AI. It's like all computer. It works at different levels. I mean, I've got a program. You know, I'm sure everybody's heard of Photoshop, and that has an AI facility on it where I can actually put a really, you know, bad photograph in, and it's not very well printed or something like that, and I can use an AI program to evaluate what it looked like originally, and it will go back to that, and that's a fantastic tool when for graphic design, which is, you know, something, you know, I don't do so much of now, but when I was doing, so that's a great tool and a great facility. One of the things that I was concerned about. I do a class online on Tuesday nights, and I was teaching charcoal, and I was also teaching about an artist called David Bomberg, who was a great charcoal, did these marvelous charcoal landscapes. And I said, what I want you to do is I want you to find a photograph of a landscape that you really like, and I want you to recreate that in charcoal in the style of David Bomberg. And what one of my students did, she didn't tell me at first, is she basically had this AI program, and she just keyed in David Bomberg charcoal landscape, you know, whatever they do.
Yeah.
And this thing came back, and I thought, and I saw it, and I said, that's rather interesting, you know, it's rather, you know, and I was taken aback by it. And then she told me, actually, it was AI. And, you know, when she then showed me the one she'd done by hand, there were certain qualities about it that I thought were much better. I preferred to the one done by AI. Very often you can tell an AI image. There's something kind of like just a little bit too smooth about it. But the thing is, I think AI will learn. That's the scary thing.
Yes.
It will learn. It will start to, you know, you'll be able to say, you know, do it in the style of Van Gogh, you know, Rembrandt or somebody, and it will do that. Mm. And it will continue to learn until it gets very convincing. And I actually find that quite frightening, actually. I'm actually because although I know it isn't, I know that there's a quality that isn't there, or there's an integrity that isn't there. The problem is that you may, you know, as each generation comes along, you'll get a generation that will just accept that and just say, well, we don't need Van Gogh anymore, we don't need that stuff that costs, you know, millions of US dollars a throw, we can have this. And that's what concerns me. It's more you know, a societal acceptance of it that I think could actually cause problems in all sorts of areas. It actually could really cheapen life, frankly.
Yeah, and that's happening in other things as well, isn't it? Music and writing.
Oh yes, music.
Interesting times. Well, they certainly will be. going back to people who are interested in becoming an artist or, yeah. or learning to paint for pleasure and everything, how many hours at a time do you suggest that they work, and how often?
Right. Well, I would say as often as possible. I would say draw once a day. And yeah. the way to do that is keep a sketchbook and, you know, just go to WH Smith's anywhere, just buy a sketchbook and some pencils or whatever you want to use. You know, a selection of graphite pencils, HB, 2B and 6B, that'll be great. And just draw every day and don't think of your sketchbook as something you have to show people. One marvelous quote was, think of your sketchbook as your best friend. And you don't have to show it. You can basically just confide in this sketchbook and you just draw and just do, just draw whenever you can. Try to draw once a day, even if it's only for 20 minutes, 10 minutes, something like that. And the other thing is I would recommend you doing is learning from the greats. You know, go to your library or go onto Google Images, find an artist you like and find their drawings and copy their drawings. And, you know, and just, you know, that, there's nothing wrong with copying. That's how all the great artists learned, was by copying the masters, copying the greats.
So drawing is essentially the first step to yeah. take before painting. Yes,
it is. It is. I mean, I recently saw a program with an artist called Maggie Hamlin who said that drawing is like practicing scales.
Yeah.
It's like the rudiments.
And what type of subjects would you draw? Would you just sort of look out the window and draw a picture?
You can do that. You can make, might have a fruit bowl. You might have a apple, orange and a banana. You do that. One thing you can do is, there's one artist called Jeffrey Camp who used to say that if you need something to draw, draw your non-dominant hand. You know, so if you're right-handed, draw your left hand. Unless you've had your hand removed, some people have, I know. But, I mean, your hand's always going to be there. And you can pose your hand whichever way you like. And, you know, and hands are the hardest things to draw. So get to practicing drawing your hand is a fantastic, exercise.
Sounds good. And what about sort of drawing something out of your imagination?
Yeah, well, that's I would start off, drawing from your imagination isn't great. I totally, but I think, in order to do that, you need to know what the real world around you looks like.
Yeah.
And start there. But, drawing in your imagination, I encourage that as well. I encourage, creativity to me is a bit like dreaming. You know, when we dream, what's happening in our heads is that we're putting all these things together from different parts of the world, different parts of our life, and it's all getting jumbled together. And so you get these very surreal sort of, interactions. You get suddenly, a sandwich, but the sandwich is 10 foot high and things like that.
Yeah.
I just the ability to dream through your art and put your art down, as if you were dreaming, that's something I encourage.
And how do you find your speciality when you're eventually sort of moving on to paint? So you've got watercolors, yeah. sketching, oils, or acrylic.
Yeah.
How do you actually find what you're good at?
Well, you just have a go at all of them. This is what I do when I teach my painting and drawing classes. I give the students access to as many different techniques, methods, ideas, materials as possible. And I say, look, we might do watercolors one week and you might say, I absolutely hate this and I'm never going to do it again. And that's fine because you've now worked out what you don't want to do. Most people, you just got to try all these things. I mean, there's some people who, there's some artists and colleges that run weekend courses, like on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
And, I know people who just go to as many as those and they just, find out if this is something they could do. But all these things, you do have to practice them. I used to use acrylics when I was at art college. I got a commission to paint a mural, and if there was any justice in the art world, I would have been hung because it was so bad. But did this, and I thought to myself, what am I going to do this on? And I'd only just found out about acrylics, and so I did it in acrylics, and then I just kept painting with acrylics for ages, and then I just picked up oils and found that I could do more things with oils. And I've stuck with oils ever since. But it's just you just have to have a go at it.
Yeah, thanks for that. Mm. What do you tell someone who says, look, I really can't draw to save my life?
Mm. Well, I have met people who do have, because I do a course called So You Think You Can't Draw, and I used to be very gung-ho. I have come across people who they have, a way of looking at the world, which actually it's very difficult to break through that way of looking at the world. It's difficult to explain, you know, in an interview like this, but I've come to realize that some people have a real difficulty even getting going. And so I've been a little bit more sensitive to that. But as I say, it's the same as anything. I mean, learning to drive, anything you would do, learning to cook, you know, you would start off at the most basic level. And then just master that, you know. So as I say, with drawing, I teach cartoons, and it's basically just little round faces with smiley. You know, it really is. Anybody could do it. A child could do it.
Yeah.
And then from there, I move on. So it's basically, you know, one of the worst things is setting yourself up for a fall, you know, trying to take on Michelangelo when you've only just bought your first pencil or something like that. There's no point doing that. You have to really start at the bottom and just, you know, practice there. Yeah. And then move on to the next stage.
I like the idea of cartoons. I mean, you know, I can't remember the last time I picked up a pencil and drew anything. And it must be great to actually, you know, every day just do something as simple as that.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
There's two questions here really linked to the same thing. How important is it for budding artists to mix with other artists and share ideas? Because apart from Leonardo da Vinci, and probably a lot of the others you'll tell me, where there was like a team of people painting something.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people regard painting as a solitary pursuit. How important is it to mix with other artists?
It's very important. It's very important to show your work to other people. But you've got to find the right people, because there's a lot of really insecure egos in the art world. And there's some people who are just, you know, who are, you know, like the teachers who say you're rubbish, you can't do it. There's a lot of, you know, I'm sorry to have to say this, but there are in the art world, sometimes there's some very rude people. And I've had some horrible things, you know, said to myself. I went to one gallery once, and the woman in the gallery just said, looked at my work and said, "That's not even art," you know.
Really?
And that's to me, and I'm an art teacher, you know, and I, yeah. You know, but there are some people who are just very funny. You just avoid people who are negative, you know, give off a negative vibe and, you know, up themselves. Yeah. I go to an art society called West Sussex Art Society, and we have two types of membership. There's like full membership, which is where you show your work and they accept you as an artist and you become a full member. And then there's a thing called associate membership, and that may be where you're not as advanced an artist, but you go along anyway and you join the meeting and you come along the meetings. And we've had people who join as associate members and they go on to become full members, you know, and their art gets better. I think you're joining an art society, an art club, something like that is a really good idea. And I think, you know, that they're all over the place, everywhere, every town I seem to go to, there's, you know, I look at the posters on the local information board and there seems to be, you know, an art club everywhere. So, you know, that's the type of thing I would do.
Yeah. So it is quite a social activity as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And moving on the social activity side, how important do you think art is for mental health?
Absolutely, absolutely, really important. I mean, the classes that I teach are subsidised by the government because they see that it's a benefit to the country. What I'm doing, the both practical art and art history. I can only say for my own, you know, mental health, because I'm someone who I suffer from depression, and it's what the best medicine for me is to spend an afternoon painting or even a day if it's possible. Yeah. I think it's absolutely an incredible thing for mental health. Yeah.
You're obviously, and as I remember you at school, Steve, you're really enthusiastic about art. That's just continued throughout your life. You spend a lot of time teaching people, and you mentioned there that you also do your own art. How important, so you still do your own art now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's in oils mainly, is it?
Well, I do paint in oil. I there's another thing I do, which is what I was doing yesterday afternoon, was dry point, it's a bit like etching. Oh, and yeah. I have an etching press in my studio, which is a very high pressure press, and it's where you scratch into usually into metal plates, and then you print off these metal plates, and it's quite a complicated quite an involved process. But I that's what I'm doing. It's what I tend to do in the winter. During the summer, I go out with my easel, and I paint out in the fields. But I tend to, during winter, do stuff actually in the studio.
Do you think that, and obviously in the business world, it's very much sort of using your left-hand side of the brain, right, yeah. Tends to be the right and all the rest of it. Do you find that painting gives you a better perception or understanding of attention to detail?
Yes. I think I've mentioned the last time I spoke to you, Bob, was about my trips to India.
Yes.
And the first time I went, I could only do a 1 week. It was amazing how much I packed into that week. But the friends I went with, they were there a week before. And they said that the week before they were looking around, and seeing all the wonderful things. And then the week I was there, and I had my sketchbook, and I kept pointing out things like, the fact that they all the homes have metal grates, but every single metal grate is a different pattern. You never see two the same. Yeah. And they were saying that it's like when I was there, it's like they saw the place again. And I do think that's from being a visual artist, is that you are looking, and you mentioned the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. I mean, that's a construct that some people are knocking now, but I still think it works very well as a construct. So I think if you go around in your like labeling things and categorizing things, and which is what we do most of our working lives with spreadsheets and whatever. Yeah. When you then use that right hemisphere, and you're actually thinking in terms of things which are more intuitive, more visual, more feelings based, you do see life in a different way. I mean, that's why artists are such difficult people, and such weird people and disorganized people, is because they live in that side, yeah, of the brain.
I wasn't even going to touch that.
No.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So tell us about some of your courses.
My courses. Okay. Well, the one course I'm doing, which I'm starting tomorrow night, is it's called Painting and Drawing for Beginners Online.
Yeah.
And it's on, yes, it's Tuesday nights from 7 till 9. And basically we do it on Zoom, and it works very well. I have people from all over the country. I have people in Warwickshire, Oxford, Reading, down here on the South Coast. Because it's done online, you can be anywhere. One chap was actually, while he was doing it, he was touring Europe in his camper van thing. And so often he'd just stop and he'd do the class with us. And he would, one minute he'd be in Assisi in Italy, next minute he'd be in Croatia, but he was, yeah. he was marvelous. So that's that one. And
Steve, just to stop you there. That course is starting tomorrow. So we're in, getting towards the end of September now. The show's probably going to be out in November.
Okay.
How many weeks? Oh, well,
you could start that in January.
So anybody listening, obviously, who missed the September one, you can start in January. Well, we'll put all the links to those on the show notes, Steve.
Yeah.
Anyway, you mentioned about some of your other courses.
Yeah. Well, the other course, I'm doing two different subject in art history. I'm doing one simply on impressionism, and it goes right from some artists like Corot, Millet, and Courbet, who were like pre-impressionist, then the impressionist proper, Monet, Manet, Pizarro, Renoir, and then we go on to the post-impressionist people like Van Gogh and Gauguin, Toulouse-Lautrec and people like that. And and then the other course I'm doing, which is I'm really excited about, is a new course called The Classical World, because so much of what of our world today, and people may not even realize it, but it's rooted in the classical world. If you look at a building like the White House, or the the Bank of England, you know, that they're all based on Greek temples, you know, and we're still building things in that style.
Yes.
And that's one. It's a 30-week course, which I'm, and then the other one I'm doing is painting and drawing, which is going to be, we're looking at different aspects of how to make a painting or, you know, a picture really work. The first thing we're looking at is how to create light in a painting, so that when you look at it, you feel your eyes are being dazzled, but it's just paint on canvas, you know. That ability to do that. We're looking at different ways of doing that. So that's an intermediate course. That's not for beginners.
Yeah. Okay. And any other projects coming up?
Well, I'm going back to India in February next year.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to take, I'm going to do some paintings there. Yes. And I used to do these like graphic, works. I don't do that type of work so much. I'm probably going to do paintings and dry points, you know, dry point prints based on it. I'm still, you know, my intention when I go there is not just to go as a tourist, but just, you know, to do something that will actually raise money for the projects, you know, working with street children and that type of thing. So that's that. And then I've got some exhibitions, you know, always coming up that I'm working for. So, yeah, that's where I am at the moment.
Yeah, you sound very busy.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Where can people find out more about your work and how can they reach you?
Okay, the best thing is if you go to my website, which is called stevecarrollarttutor.uk. So it's Steve, S-T-E-V-E. Carol is C-A-R-R-O-L-L. And then art tutor and .uk. And you'll find everything on there. You'll find my courses.
Well, Steve, this has been a really fascinating conversation. It's been really interesting to learn more about your approach to art, which I found, and I'm sure listeners will find, really inspiring. And I actually look forward to getting out my sketchbook.
Good.
My guest today has been Steve Carroll. Steve's an artist, author, and teacher, and you can find a link to Steve's courses on the show notes. Thank you for coming on the show, Steve.
That's my pleasure.
Listening to Undercurrent Stories. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please feel free to share the show link to your friends and family, and if you have 60 seconds, I will be most grateful if you would please rate and review. To hear more episodes, please subscribe to the show and visit undercurrentstories.com. If you leave your email in the link, we will notify you as soon as new episodes are released. Also, check out our social media links, details of which can be found on the show notes. Until next time, this is Bob Wells wishing you all the very best.